Head to Subway for the tangy new Tuscan Chicken Melt, seasoned chicken, melted cheese, and olive vinaigrette. With 9 grams of fat, it's part of a Subway Fresh Fit meal, a simpler way to enjoy eating better. Hurry in today. Subway. Eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. It's been far too long, and we're catching him probably in one of the greatest weeks or months of his life on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Mr. Matthew Berry, what's happening?
You're absolutely correct. Listen, a 25-point taco blowout of the Magic Game 1 of the NBA Finals for my Lakers. Love that.
What do you mean taco blowout? What's that?
Taco blowout. Well, because when the Lakers win at home and score 100 points and hold their opponent to under 90, everyone gets 2 free tacos.
Oh, so when Josh Powell hit the 3 with like 10 seconds left, that's why it was like complete chaos?
Exactly.
Oh, everyone, I had no idea.
Tacos. Yeah, that's why people went nuts for Josh Powell hitting that shot, is because people wanted the tacos. And I'm making this a verb now. To taco an opponent in the NBA Finals is amazing.
That was pretty good. In fact, I was waiting at halftime for Orlando to make their typical run where they play like garbage for a half, and then all of a sudden they make 17 straight threes. Didn't happen. Actually went the other way. They kept missing and actually played worse.
I was shocked by that. I mean, I was really shocked because I expected the same thing, too. I mean, because I kept thinking they're getting so many open threes. Eventually, they have to start falling. But let's hand it to Stan Van Gundy for a second for playing the guy that's been out for 5 months more than the point guard that got them here.
I'm glad you brought it up. I was absolutely perplexed and astonished last night. The Magic were playing from Game 7 of the Boston, actually, second half of Game 6 of the Boston series through the Cleveland series, really had cohesion and something special going.
Yep.
And Jameer Nelson comes back, fine. He's better than Anthony Johnson, but you don't want to mess with what's going on here. And instead he plays Jameer Nelson 23 minutes. Like, that's crazy.
He's on the court with most of the first team. I mean, I guess the argument is, if you're going to take the Stan Van Gundy side, is that at that point they were so bad that he's looking for anything, someone to try to make a bucket. And maybe it's just like he figures, hey, the game's lost, so let's at least get Jameer Nelson, get him out there, get him into some game shape, try to get him used to, like, I'm conceding this game and I just want to get him out there. But
yeah, but he played the whole second quarter, though. I mean, that didn't make sense. If you've ever read anything about Rafer Alston, like, he's one of the most hypersensitive, moody. I even joked about it in my finals mailbag. It's a guy who Houston traded because Aaron Brooks was messing him up, because Aaron Brooks was kind of breathing down his neck a little, and he was in a funk. So
I thought it was an unbelievable. I mean, I was thrilled to see it, but I could not believe it. I was flabbergasted by how much he played, and then consistently played when they still had, you know, when they had Turkoglu out there, when they had Dwight Howard out there. I'm like, what, really? And by the way, he took a ton of shots.
I know.
That was the other thing. The other thing that was amazing, like, and I don't have the box score in front of me, but I would love to know how many shots, like, Tony Battee, Gorat, Jameer Nelson, like, how many shots people that shouldn't be shooting at all on the Magic took? Because it seemed like they were shooting a lot.
16 from those three guys.
Something like that, I guess. Like,
yeah.
Right? I mean, like, is 16 in a game where they shot maybe, what, 70 times?
It was a weird game. They looked nervous. I actually expected them to be nervous in the first half, because everybody forgets this, but they were really nervous the first game at Cleveland. But then they fell so far behind that Cleveland kind of relaxed. Everybody's hugging and high-fiving each other. And then all of a sudden somebody made a three, and the ball just kind of got rolling for the Magic. Didn't happen last night. And I think the reason it didn't happen was because, you know, Kobe, as the broadcast team said 3,000 times, Kobe had the look last night. He had the look. he wasn't losing last night.
Bill,
Kobe's one of the two guys in the league that can get that look on his face, and you know it's over. And he got it in the third quarter, and that was it.
Bill, would you say that Kobe was doing work last night?
I felt like he was doing a little work. and he's coaching, and he wants this so badly. It's like, can I just enjoy the game without everybody trying to prove to me that Kobe is really made the leap and all that stuff? Just let me watch. Just let me watch the game.
I mean, he has. Like, you know me. I mean, you're not a Kobe fan.
He did it last year. He did the same thing in the San Antonio series, and I had to hear the broadcaster say the exact same things. Kobe's not different this year than he was last year. He had 29 shots through three quarters. Same freaking guy.
He's eight rebounds, eight receipts. Listen, I'm a Kobe apologist. You know this.
I know. That's why I'm having you on.
But and I thought he shot a little bit too much. But on the other hand, you know, and he said this in the post game press conference. He said, "Look, they're giving me the jumper, and he's making it." I mean, you know, I didn't think there were only a couple of times where I thought he forced shots.
For I'm torn
part,
on
I thought
this
he
one.
He took legitimate shots.
Yeah, I'm torn on this one because I'm of the camp that they're not as good when he shoots that many times because I think guys like Gasol and Odom just eventually check out. But on the other hand, if he's going to make 50% of them. And it got to the point in the third quarter where he was just ripping the heart out of the Magic. Like, they all had that look like, crap, we're not going to beat this guy. Then I think it's the right thing to do. I just don't think they could win four games with him shooting 35 shots. Or, you know, he didn't even play the fourth quarter. He was on pace for high 30s.
Oh, definitely.
You don't want that.
No, you didn't. I mean, except when he's, like, when he's shooting it the way he is. I mean, there was just a time there. I did feel like, though, and I say this, and again, huge Kobe fan, huge Laker fan, Kobe apologist, but even I was just like, it struck me when he went back in the game in the fourth quarter, and he was at like 36, he was like, he really wants 40. There were a couple of times where I felt like he was really forcing it, trying to get to 40.
And my friend House emailed me with like 3 minutes left, and he's like, I will lose all respect for the Magic for the rest of the series if one of these guys doesn't crack Kobe right now, because why is he in the game? And he shouldn't have been in the game. They're up 24 with 3 minutes to go. He's trying to get his 40. At that point, you tell Gortat, we're going to revoke your green card unless you crack this guy next time he goes to the basket. You got to hit the guy. Jesus.
I'm with you. What's the point of having Tony Battee on your roster if not to send him out there for exactly that reason?
How about Redick? Tell Redick, hey, Redick, we'll pick up your option next year if you crack Kobe. But I just couldn't believe that, and I couldn't believe he was in the game. You know, Phil's done that a couple times.
I was shocked by that. The only thing I can think of is that, you know, maybe he wanted to send a little – first off, Kobe may have just said, I'm going back in. And I sort of feel like when Kobe says that, Kobe goes in, you know. And he may have wanted to get 40. But the other thing is just maybe Phil wanted to kind of like really try to demoralize the Magic.
I'm of both camps. Kobe wanted the 40, but I think also they didn't want Orlando to hit like five threes in the last 3 minutes with it. So the final score was 188.
Right.
And then the Magic would be like, hey, at least we got it going there near the end. They just didn't want that to happen.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's a little bit of both, but I'm with you of the camp that I agree the Lakers are a better team when Kobe takes 20 shots as opposed to, you know, 30, and I'm a little concerned because, you know, I mean, Fisher hit a couple there, but we still see nothing from Sasha. Ariza did not have a good game at all. Got in some early foul trouble, and you know, he hit one shot.
He only took four.
Yeah.
Ariza. I was shocked. 8 minutes for Shannon Brown, who I thought was really their best guard in the playoffs other than Kobe. I don't know whether the matchups don't favor him or what was going on there.
I was surprised about that, too, especially because I didn't think – I mean, luckily he didn't – luckily he wasn't really hitting much, but I didn't think anyone stopped Jameer Nelson. And by the way, that concerns me as a Laker fan going through the rest of the series is that I didn't think anyone really – I thought Jameer Nelson was able to penetrate pretty much at will.
And that's been not only your Achilles heel this year, but
forever.
Really dating back to the 80s. the pesky little point guard who could get in the paint. For some reason, the Lakers have never been able to stop that guy ever.
Look,
it's weird.
I mean, I think you could make an argument that the whole reason that the Houston Rockets series went as far as it did is Aaron Brooks and the Lakers' inability to stop him.
On the days that, and unfortunately for the Lakers, he's a second-year guy and incapable of playing two games in a row that are good. But you saw it like two or three times that series where it was just like, yeah, we're not stopping this
guy.
Well,
right. I mean, by all accounts, the Lakers should have won that series in four or five games.
Yes.
I mean, and so the fact that it got extended the way it did is, I think, entirely due to Aaron Brooks and the fact that they couldn't defend that.
Well, and also Odom got hurt midway through, and the Lakers are just different when he's not healthy.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I was happy to see Odom. I thought Odom played well.
14 rebounds last night.
Yeah. Odom's always been a very good rebounder, very underrated as a rebounder.
I will say you have a couple advantages. I didn't wager on this series because I missed the two regular season games, and I just wasn't sure like what the matchups were and all that stuff. The two advantages you have, it seems to me, is that they don't really have anyone on the roster to defend Kobe. Not that anybody else does either, but you know, I guess it's Courtney Lee. He looked nervous last night. He's the only guy who's at least going to get in Kobe's mug and make him work for the points. Pietrus is kind of too tall and not quick enough side to side for him.
Right.
So that's one. And then the other one is, you know, the way Gasol and Odom crashed the offensive boards when motivated.
Yes.
The Magic, Howard cannot keep both of those guys off. And Gasol, to me, that's his most underrated skill, and the reason that I think he's one of the best 10 players in the league, like those sneaky little, comes in with those hands and just kind of repositions the ball and touches in. He does it three times a game.
Right. See, I actually think his most underrated skill is his passing. I think he's an unbelievable passer.
Yeah, he's that too. He's awesome. He's a great player. It's unbelievable that you got him for his loser brother and three lousy picks.
I think we also sent a bag of Magic beans.
It's unbelievable. I not enough is made of the fact that Memphis just said, yeah.
When you say not enough is made, do you mean by anything other than the sports guy column on ESPN.com?
I believe
you bring it up at least.
It's
at least
amazing
every other
to me.
Column.
It's such a complete failure, like in 2008, that trade could be made. I understand it in like 1979 when teams didn't have scouts, but. Gasol has so many skills. I just don't understand how he ends up on the open market for 30 cents.
Well, he was injured. He was injured, and don't forget, they also got Kwame Brown's expiring contract.
Watch how they screw up the number two pick, the Grizzlies. Uh-oh. You have to take Rubio too. You have to, and they're going to end up taking the big dude from UConn and messing that up. But anyway,
if you had gotten the Timberwolves GM job.
Yeah.
Would your first call have been to Chris Wallace?
Oh, I would call him every day. I would move to Memphis and operate from out there and try to drink with him.
Yeah.
And try to put myself in a position for when he makes a dumb trade to be the guy who's there.
Right. But you got to call my boy Bill. Bill, what
so
do you want?
The other thing I thought was interesting was that Odom presents a problem for the Lewis Turkoglu combo because he is long enough to kind of bug him. Mm-hmm. Turkoglu really hasn't played well in this playoffs. He's made some big shots in crunch time, but overall hasn't really been that good.
Well,
and
what's weird is I've actually thought he played well at the very start of that game, and then they went away from him. Like, he was hitting, like, the first couple of shots there. Like, actually thought for the first, I don't know, 5-7 minutes of that game, Turkoglu looked really, really good, and then it seemed like that was the weird thing. It just seemed like the Magic went away from what they do. Now, you've watched them more than I have, but they just struck me as going away from what they normally do, which is like, you know, they didn't make the extra pass. They settled for jump shots, and maybe they just weren't hitting them. But
I thought there was more they weren't hitting them. Like the third quarter started, and they must have had five wide open shots, and they missed all of them.
Yeah.
But Turkoglu, he was terrible in the Philly series, 36%. Played well against Boston, mainly because we were guarding him with Brian Scalabrine and Eddie House and, you know, the 13th, 14th, and 15th guys in the roster. And then against Cleveland, he wasn't good either, 39%. I feel like he is probably the guy in the team that the Lakers could most easily kind of handle.
Right.
But I agree with you. The Magic looked messed up last night. Something was off. I don't know if it was the Jameer Nelson thing. I've heard that that they really don't like Van Gundy, apparently. Not to just throw out random rumors, but,
right.
You know, it's just apparently he's really tough. You even saw it last night. I don't know if you saw his press conference, but he's talking about Jameer Nelson. He's like, Jameer was good in the first half, but, you know, he was really not good in the second half. He was really bad. I'm not blaming Jameer for what happened, but I'm just saying he didn't play well. He's really, like, kind of killing the guy. And it's
well,
like, you're the coach. Why are you saying this?
Yeah, and he's earlier in the season, didn't he sell out Dwight Howard at a press conference too?
Does it all the time. That's why these guys, like, they're very – it's not a warm team.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think the five guys who are out there in crunch time like playing with each other, but overall, there's a little distance with the coach. And you saw it come out in that Boston series in game five. It just came, went flying out. And then they kind of suppressed it. But to me, it's like, you know, if Kobe has that look on his face, and by the way, did he practice it in the mirror? Where did that new look come from? The badger look, whatever that is, where he's just the bottom jaw.
The bottom jaw.
Wait, well, you're a Lakers fan. Have you seen that look before 3 weeks ago?
I haven't seen that look. I haven't seen that look. Let's get Spike Lee on the phone. Maybe there's some unused footage.
Do you think he watched
the look?
Do you think he watched Kobe do work and said, I don't like my game face. I'm going to go in the mirror and practice the different ones. And then he came out and he was like, honey, what do you think of this one? Ooh, I like it. I like the lower teeth. Nice.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's, the only two theories I have are that, well, he saw Kobe doing work and maybe he's always had the look. It's just so random that he's not actually talking at one of his teammates that we finally noticed the look. Either that or maybe he's trying to emulate the puppet. The puppet's kind of got that look too.
It's a marketing savvy. I like it.
Yeah.
I like how he just can get the two bottom teeth, but you can't see any of the other ones. Looks like a beaver. It's scary when Kobe gets that look. Ooh.
Listen, here's the thing though. Yeah. If you're a fan of a team, which obviously I am, the thing you have to love about Kobe, okay, and you can talk about his person. I mean, obviously, we could probably spend 2 hours talking about Kobe. Okay,
let's do it.
Listen, but I'll say this about Kobe. I love the fact that he was all business.
Me too.
You know, completely all business, and I loved what he said. I don't know if you heard. I heard his post game press conference. I didn't hear everyone's, but I did get to catch all of Kobe's. And I loved Kobe's attitude, which was, "It's one game, means nothing. Forget about it." You know, they were trying to goad him into, you know, is this series over? Is, you know, have you guys taken it to the next level and all this stuff? And Kobe was just like, "It's one game, means nothing. Magic are a great team. They're resilient. They're going to come back. This means nothing. We have to take it to the next level." And by the way, for the first time, I felt like really admitted. He's just like, they asked him about the look. They actually asked him about the, and he just said, "I just want it so bad." He said, "I want it so bad. It's all the emotions coming to play. I just want it so bad."
And also, I've been practicing for 3 weeks.
Well, listen. Hey, wouldn't you practice a look?
I think I would.
Yeah.
I think I would.
Clearly, it would be all I have. He doesn't need a look. He's got unbelievable athletic skill and God-given abilities. But
yes.
I would want a shtick. I would want a look. I'd want something. And I think we can all agree tats would look stupid on me.
Yeah, but if anybody I know would get one, it would be you.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm looking up field goal attempts.
Mm-hmm.
Playoffs. One game since 1991. Kobe's 34 attempts are 18th all time. Isn't that weird? Guess who's number one? Michael Jordan, 43 in the 1993 finals. That must have been the double overtime game. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 34 attempts is a lot for a finals game.
It is, and yet, listen, they played him one-on-one. He was hitting all of his shots. I mean, it's hard to argue with the results.
It is. It's very hard to argue.
And then the argument against Kobe is always like, oh, well, he takes all the shots, but eight assists.
Yeah.
So he got his guys involved, and there were a couple of times where he fed guys where, you know, like Odom would blow a layup or something like that. You know, he could have had a few more assists, too, if guys knocked down a few more shots. If you're going to criticize Kobe, there's a lot you can criticize. I don't know that last night's game is one of the places you want to start.
I almost decided to go through that entire tape play by play and see if he actually had 8 assists, because that number seemed awfully high. I don't really remember any of the 8 assists.
I remember some of them early on.
They seem like assists that you get at the Staples Center if you're Kobe Bryant. It's like, oh, yeah, he passed to Odom, who took 17 dribbles and then took a 17-footer. Yeah, that's an assist. I mean, really, did you watch that game and think, man, Kobe, 8 assists, yeah.
I will say,
that makes sense.
I will cop to the fact that when I heard 8 assists, because I went to the game. I was at Staples, so I was at the game in person. So I didn't, you know, I didn't have the stats in front of me. And so when I heard driving home that he had 8 assists, I was surprised by that number. I thought he had maybe 4 or 5. So
I would have guessed 2.
fair enough. That's you.
I'm just saying. It's funny, these home assists. This is a trend that started in the 80s with Magic and John Stockton.
Right.
Where Utah would have these games and John Stockton would have 19 assists. You'd be like, wow, really? 19 assists? I watched that game. Hey, it seemed like he had like 8.
I am sure someone who is listening to this now will go through the tape of that game and count Kobe's assists.
Would love to see it. If there's somebody who has nothing to do on a rainy Friday, go through the tape and see if you can account for those 8, because that number seemed about twice as high as normal. But
to me, if you want to label a criticism at Kobe, I think it's the going for 40. Like, if you watch him when he had 36 and he comes back in, there's definitely a couple of times where he forces shots. Like, he misses his first 3 or 4 shots when he came back in, and he's definitely forcing it. And you can see him, he's calling for the ball, and, you know, there's...
Yeah, a couple of times he had his hand, like, way up when, you know, like almost
Fisher
jumping up and down. Yeah.
Yeah. So, if you want to make that criticism, like, I think you could make an argument. I don't know if it's the case or not. You could make the argument that he was literally just looking for 40. That he at that point, he cared more about individual stats than team stats. I don't know if that's true. I mean, it may be about, again, like, Phil could have sent him in there and said, like, look, you know...
Take care
of
business.
Black Mamba.
Yeah.
I'm guessing Phil calls him Black Mamba. Listen, Black Mamba, go in there and, you know, just put a dagger through their heart.
He calls him BM.
He
calls him BM.
BM.
For Black Mamba. I got to say, you know what?
Yeah.
A decade of cheap shots at Kobe later.
Yep.
I can't stop it anymore. He's going to win this finals, and he's going to go down as one of the top 10 guys of all time.
You're reverse jinxing him.
You're trying
to reverse jinx him. I'm not convinced they win. I like our chances, but I'm not convinced they win.
I'm so mad at this garbage Orlando team that really could have lost the Philly series. They get extended to 7 by a Boston team that had a coach that did the same thing every game for 7 games, and we had an 8-man team, and 3 of those guys were Eddie House, Brian Scalabrine, and I can't even remember. I'm trying to block the whole series out of my mind, but we're running crunch time plays.
You Chicago. You should have.
We shouldn't have.
We were lucky
to even be in the second round, and then you know they play round 3 against Cleveland, and when are we going to find out what Cleveland's game plan was in that series? Do you think that'll come out
terrible,
like the JFK assassination information in 2063?
Right. Eventually, we'll find it out. That'll be unearthed. It's unreal.
LeBron must have been so mad last night watching that game and thinking like, oh my God, I hate everybody. I'm going to the Knicks.
So I was listening to ESPN Radio driving to the Staples Center, and one of the things they were doing there, Den Ullman Long, their afternoon show there, they were having guys text in with, you know, potential signs.
Mm.
And one guy texted in, I thought this was really funny, like, hey, LeBron, you want to witness this? So I thought that was pretty funny.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
We're all witnesses, including LeBron.
Right, exactly.
What do you think of – nobody outside L.A. is going to give a crap about this, but I don't care.
Okay.
The rejuvenated Staples Center area is like one of the all-time holy crap things that, like, if you've seen it before and after, it's like – it's really like that – what was that show where they redid everybody – Ugly Woman?
The Swan.
The Swan. It's the Swan of sports arena areas. It's unbelievable.
It's an extreme makeover.
It's the happiest place I've ever been to at a sporting event other than possibly Fenway. Like you go and it's like there's weird things hanging from trees and it's happy and there's music playing and there's restaurants and it's
right,
insane.
And Nokia Theater and hey, American Idol's across the street and I'm with you. It's amazing because for years it was parking lots and girls handing out flyers for strip clubs.
And like bad, gross Holiday Inns.
Yes, exactly. Like
and just tires and just the worst, scummiest place on the planet.
Just nothing. Like really like kind of dilapidated and just nowhere you would go except for the Staples Center.
Yeah.
And then for like 3 years it was just nothing but dirt as they were building all this stuff and you're kind of like, what's this section going to be? And then like you show up now and it's unreal. It is. It is Disneyland for adults. They've done an amazing job there. They got like an ESPN zone there.
They got
like
Wolfgang Puck. They got Katsuya.
Right.
They got a Lucky Strike. They have a place called the Yard House, which in my opinion is the single best bar in Los Angeles. It's got like 50 beers on tap and a ton of TVs.
I haven't even heard of this.
Starbucks.
Apparently there's a, I think it's called the Speakeasy or something. There's some sort of like secret bar a block away from Staples Center too.
Yeah.
Like you go to some bar and then there's like a bar in the back or something like that. You
Ooh.
Have to know about it.
Ooh,
I'm sure
like
you know about this.
It's like the bar in Bad Influence with James Spader and Rob Lowe.
Yes.
When they'd find these little secret bars and Rob Lowe would know the cat. Have you watched that movie recently?
No. It's been a long time.
I think that's one of the single strangest movies. I'm going to put it in the top 10 weirdest. Why did they make this movie? What was the point of the movies?
Okay.
Rob Lowe's like he's like a drifter, but he's got money and he meets James Spader and he wants to like mess with James Spader and James Spader's into it and he's like going to work. He's like, don't call me Michael, call me Mick. And like he's getting in fights and then Rob Lowe turns on him and then it turns into this homoerotic chess match for the last 45 minutes. I don't know what the hell happened. Rob Lowe kills this girl in his apartment.
It's one of those things where it probably started out as like an art house flick. And then Rob Lowe signed on, and they're like, ooh, we can make it with Rob Lowe.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're screwed. It's kind of like when you're talking about, like, if they'd made The Wrestler with Nick Cage. It's the same, you know, but this was one of the bad versions of that, where it probably started out as, like, a really good, interesting script, and then just got, you know.
So you're saying that it was originally an indie. It made a lot more sense as a homoerotic chess match, and then Rob Lowe ruined it.
This is what I'm saying.
What
Not
did you
the first
think-
piece of art Rob Lowe has ruined.
What do you think of my theory that Denzel is waiting for Jack to die and now it's becoming too late and now Leo is like Prince William, the next in line to be the number one Lakers fan?
I like the theory, but I don't know. I'm not convinced Leo's the number two. I mean, Leo's surpassed Denzel. See, and I think Andy Garcia, I mean, you know, first off.
He can't even get courtside.
I know. Poor Andy Garcia's been.
Andy's like, they show him and he's like behind one of the baskets in row 11.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be and by the way, don't forget, like, Dustin Hoffman, I feel like, was the heir apparent for the number two for a long time because Hoffman went to a ton of games.
Yeah, I don't know. He was a Knicks fan, though, in the 70s. I can't give him that one.
Listen, Mr. Clippers fan, Boston fan. I don't want to.
I'm not a Clippers fan. I don't even like the Clippers. I openly detest them.
you openly detest their coach. That's
so sure. Who would you say is the – All right, let's walk through it. So, yeah, it's kind of grisly, but whatever.
Right.
Nicholson's not going to be around forever. Nicholson
dies.
He
might be, by the way. I'm not convinced he has human blood.
Well, he might not. I mean, as I pointed out in the mailbag, like, this is a guy who routinely partied with John Belushi and Hunter S. Thompson.
I read that of yours, and I was just like, I was stunned by that. I mean, it makes sense. And,
yeah.
I mean, Nicholson, I have this debate with my friends. Like, is there – I've only come up with one person I think's on par. But is there anyone that you think that is as cool as Jack Nicholson?
As
just
cool?
Eternally cool. And has been as cool as he has for as long as he has. You know, people come and go. But, I mean, Jack is literally above the law.
You mean somebody who was cool for, a 40, 45-year
cool
stretch?
Our parents. Bill, cool for our parents, now cool for us. And, by the way, your kids will think he's cool.
That's interesting. So you're saying, like, celebrities that – whoever they meet at whatever time, people are like, wow, that guy's cool.
Yeah. And he's like, epitomizes cool. I'm not saying popular. I'm not saying famous. I'm saying just pure, the epitome of cool. Like, it doesn't matter what he does. And I'm not even saying, because I think he's above the law. You know, Nicholson could do whatever. So is Barkley. But I don't know that people think Barkley's cool. People like Barkley. He's also above the law.
I think people feel this way about Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Everybody I've ever met about Bill Clinton, they have a story about when they met him or like he was looking over my girlfriend like a rib roast or like there's always like some sort of cool Bill Clinton story.
I met Bill Clinton once with Jeff Reese, who you know
yeah.
Jeff. And Jeff Reese and I were having dinner in this small town and we walk in there and there's Clinton. And we're like, holy crap, that's Bill Clinton. So we finish our dinner, and a couple people had gone up to Clinton and been okay. And there's, like, these two Secret Service agents, like, over by the bar. Like, in the minute you take one step towards Bill, like, they're up, you know,
yeah.
And they're ready to, like, you know. But Bill, like, come over. And I have to tell you something. Like, whatever your politics are, you know, I have to tell you something. Like, everyone I think that's met Bill, and I'm a Clinton fan.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, we went over there and we're just like, you know, Mr. President, and this was during the election, actually. This is during the primary, so Hillary was still in it.
Yeah.
And so we went over there and just said, Mr. President, just honored to meet you, wanted to come over and say hello, and he's just like, what's your name, you know, and you know, I'm Matthew, I'm Jeff, you know, we work at ESPN, he's like, oh, I watch it all the time, I love SportsCenter, I mean, you know, and we asked him a couple questions, you know, we're like, and what do you say to the president, right? So we asked him about a couple of issues, like his thoughts on a couple of issues. and we asked him about Hillary and how Hillary was doing, everything like that. And the thing about him is I think everyone said this, is like when you meet him, you get it. Like he immediately focused in. He's like, well, Matthew, like immediately remembered our name. And he said, well, here's what we got to do. And I think, you know, the Democrats have to do this. And, you know, you look at what the Republicans are, you know, and didn't give like just some BS answer. Like gave an intricate, like considered the question, gave us a really thoughtful answer to each of our questions. Never made us feel like we were bothering him. Never made us feel like, you know, okay, I'm going to give you 2 minutes and then, you know, you should get out of here. Like I felt like, and we didn't, but I felt like literally we could have said, hey, barkeep, another round. We're hanging with Bill.
And then he asked you, did you guys bring any ladies with you?
No. Actually, he was there with a friend. But,
Wait, hold on. I found my Saturday Night Live book.
Okay.
The greatest Saturday Night Live book ever, A Backstage History of Saturday Night Live by Doug Hill and Jeff Weingrad, which is out of print, but you can get it in used bookstores.
Right.
So
is that the interview? Is that like they?
No, that's the one that came later. That wasn't as good. That was, I still love that one, but this one is like one of the all-time great books. But in this Saturday Night Live book, there's a whole part about when Belushi started to really melt down with drugs in the show.
Right.
Here's the next. There's when Ruth Gordon hosted the show, the opening right. sketch was Belushi's doctor threatening to cut off his drugs. So then it says the post-show party that night was blah 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 blah. John was in his wheelchair and his friend Jack Nicholson was behind it pushing. Belushi was a man possessed like a character in a Stephen King novel, and he careened around 8H with Nicholson's wicked grin hovering over his shoulder. John was Zonko out of his skull, Tom Schiller remembers.
That's awesome. Yeah,
that's Jack Nicholson 32 years ago pushing John Belushi around in a wheelchair and they're both zonked.
Of course. He's eternally cool. I only have one guy that I think is in the same stratosphere of Nicholson as cool. Can you think of anyone?
No.
Right.
Who?
Bono.
Oh, you know what? Oh, Bono's a good one. I forgot MJ is like that. MJ in a room, everybody melts.
Yeah.
He's got a force of nature. I've been in a room like 3 different times with him, and each time it was like everybody was just little chess pawns.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
Bono's a good one, though.
Yeah, I mean, Bono's just, like, eternally cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe the rule should be somebody that can wear sunglasses indoors and you don't question it.
Or have bad hair.
Right. And both Bono and Nicholson qualify for that.
All right, let's walk through. This is a little macabre.
Okay.
Macabre?
Macabre? Yes,
macabre.
Yeah.
Tim McCarver? So Nicholson dies. Nicholson dies.
Right.
He dies, let's say he dies in like December.
Mm-hmm.
Next Laker game.
Who's in that seat?
Seat empty? Seat's empty,
yes.
Right?
Seat is empty.
Seat's empty, emotional, 10-minute tribute beforehand?
Not 10 minutes, 2 minutes, but yes.
Second game after the death. Seat still empty?
There'd be some sort of press release, because my guess is, I mean, like maybe it goes to his daughter or his family or something like that, or they do something like maybe they'd auction it off, or it'd be, maybe it's some sort of charity thing.
Here's my prediction.
Okay.
I think they paint the seat differently, or they paint like his sunglasses on it or something, or they change the color of it in some way to commemorate that it was Jack's seat.
I believe that. I mean, they were, you know, like when Chick Hearn passed away. You know, they retired. I mean, not that Chick Hearn had a number, but they have his. You know, they have a jersey with a microphone on it. You know, up there in the rafters.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Do they retire Jack in some way in the rafters?
Yes, I think they do.
They were. Name in a pair of sunglasses.
Yeah, Jack. Jack with a pair of sunglasses, like next to the Chick thing. I think they have to. I think they should. As a Laker fan, I would want them to do that.
Family, obviously not as interested in going to the games without Jack. Maybe they don't want to give up that real estate. But let's say the Lakers said, okay, Denzel, you're getting called up to the big leagues. We're giving you Jack's seat.
It's not going to be Denzel.
Not going to be Denzel. Leo?
It will not be
Denzel. It's not going to be Andy Garcia.
It won't be. Oh, it's definitely not Andy Garcia. It won't be. It would be, I'll tell you, I have two thoughts as to who it could be. But you know who I think it would be? And you're going to be surprised by this one.
Who?
I think it's Diane Cannon.
Oh, no.
Diane Cannon is like also been a longtime Laker fan. She's kind of she's got those seats on the sideline over to the side.
Mm-hmm.
She's in the end zone.
I mean, with all the saline in her body, is it even healthy to have her at courtside? Like, what happens if somebody crashes into her?
There's no question there would be there would have to be a rider in the insurance policy that the Lakers take out.
Who is your other candidate?
My other candidate was Magic.
Oh, I like that call. I think that's a good one.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
I mean, because Magic is usually next to Diane Cannon at games when he goes to games.
How could we get him, though? He's never available.
listen, Magic is a very successful businessman.
He is? I've never heard about this.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Stop.
What are you saying?
Stop. He gave a lunch for ESPN employees. Like,
yeah.
Came and answered questions. And I got to tell you, like, it's all off the record, so I can't repeat anything that was at the lunch, other than to say that it was fascinating. And literally, there were probably 200, 250 ESPN employees shoved into this room listening to him. Mm. And after an hour and a half, completely unprompted, gave him a standing ovation.
Wow.
I'm dead serious about that. Gave him a standing ovation. It was fantastic. He was open about a lot of different things in his life, not just basketball. And it was a fascinating time.
At the same time, I'm not surprised to hear that, because this was a guy who was the greatest teammate of all time, probably.
You know, and we talked about it. You know, that came up. You know, teamwork definitely came up, and he talked about, you know, and again, I don't want to, you know, get into what he said, but he talked about the importance of it. He talked very much about the importance of it and how it manifests itself, you know, with LeBron, with Kobe, with some of the players in the NBA today, and how it manifested itself with him and Larry on the, you know. Mm. He had some – when we get off the podcast, I'll tell you, he had a couple of very funny Larry Bird stories that I can tell you.
That stuff was innate in him, though. He never had to force it. And that's always been my question with Kobe, is that I think he understands that he needs to be that way, but fundamentally he's – the only child, Gunner, I'm going to do it myself. Clint Eastwood at the end of Unforgiven, just walking in the bar and shooting everybody. And it's always been a battle with him internally. How do I try to be part of this person that is not fundamentally me, but then keep the part of me that I need that we saw last night in the third quarter?
I think that's tough. And I think you've got to understand that part of it goes back to, and I think this would be a fascinating study, like, just because so much has been written about Kobe the player, but I think Kobe the person, you know, that would have been interesting to see, you know, if Spike wants to do another documentary on Kobe, like, because you look at, like,
let's hope that.
Oh, come on.
God help us.
Well, anyway, listen, going back, to his childhood, right? I mean, he's a guy that, you know, he's in private school and he was raised by his dad. He was literally like, he was kind of in a weird way, a little, you know, kind of Todd Marinovich'd, right? You know, I mean, he was
totally.
Sort of like, he was, I mean, you know, obviously with very different results, but I mean, basically he was, from the time he was like a little kid, he was, you're going to be a basketball player. You're not only going to be a basketball player, you're going to be one of the greatest ever lived.
Well, what about the Italian part? I mean,
exactly.
6 years in Italy. How strange is that?
It's totally weird. And as opposed to like growing up, going to school like LeBron did or anything like that, where you develop normal relationships and you learn how to like just hang with the guys.
The other part
I don't think he's learned the basic. I don't think that period of time where you learn to just like be one of the guys. I don't think he ever had that.
Never. He was, even in, if you read the stuff about him in high school, he was a little bit off just because of the whole came from Italy.
Right.
Whatever. They didn't know quite what to make of him, but he was the best guy, so there was respect. But then all of a sudden, on the Lakers at age 17.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, so it's like it's. But think about how fundamentally weird that is that your whole life you're told you're one thing, right? You're going to be like this great player, and you're put on a pedestal. But when you're put on a pedestal, like, it's hard to, like, relate to the people below you because you have no basis for, you know, just those kind of the human interaction, right? Like, his human – my guess is obviously I haven't ever been there, but you think about, like, basically his entire life almost, he's been talked at, not with. Whether it's what can I do for you, Kobe, or here's, I mean, right? You know, it's.
I'll go one.
And by the way, I think that if you want to go even further, I think that's one of the reasons that he got married so early. Everyone thought he was crazy. He got married to Vanessa when he was like 21 or something like that.
She was 18.
Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, you're this good looking guy. You're rich. You're world famous. Like, have some fun, dude. And he's like, and I literally think that's part of it. Like, he wanted some normalcy. You know, he wanted, like, here's a girl that I like and, you know, let's get married.
There's two other weird parts to this. Not weird, but just it separates him from pretty much every other superstar we've ever seen. First of all, he came from a relatively privileged background.
Yes.
And, you know, the story of an NBA superstar is pretty, you know.
It's rarely from a life of privilege.
It's usually a guy who's either lower middle class or even poor, like
right.
Bird, Magic. I guess Jordan was maybe the most well off, but he was like lower middle class, living in Carolina, a bunch of brothers and sisters.
Right.
And rarely do you see a guy who actually, like, you know, his dad was a professional basketball player, made money, he traveled, he did some stuff. So that part's weird. And then
right.
the other part is that he's like the only guy who doesn't have a posse or an entourage or a bunch of friends around him or anything. Like Bird, even somebody like Bird had, you know, his drinking buddies that he drank
right.
with, and they went out and they had beer. Jordan had his guys, but you never read about, like, oh yeah, these are Kobe's four best friends. Like, think of LeBron. LeBron stayed tight with everybody he ever grew up with.
Right.
Have you ever met one Kobe? Like, oh, they, yeah, the
no.
Kobe met that guy in Italy and they've
who's
been friends.
Who's his Jacko or house that we constantly get berated with and we get sick of hearing about end
oh,
over
stop
and
it.
Over?
How dare you? but seriously though, have you ever seen, like, they cut to the crowd and it's like, yeah, that's his best friend from high school.
Listen, that's a great point. That's a great point. And
thank
not
you.
Even like even with like Shaq, you always saw Sarge.
Always.
Like, you never even see, like, you know, he's had a falling out with his dad and everything. Like, you never see, the only person you ever see is Vanessa. You'll see Vanessa in the stand sometime, but you never, you're absolutely right. You know, it's like, you don't even see, like, you know, family members.
Well, maybe, yeah, does he get along with his dad? He doesn't, right?
No.
There's some sort of bad blood there.
There was some bad blood, and I think there was, like, some sort of, you know, reconciliation, but I don't get the sense that they're close. You never see him the way that you see certain, like, Sarge is the one that always stands out to me. Like, you always saw Sarge in the stands when Shaq plays.
I thought there was some bad blood from when Kobe got married, and I think they were worried whether she was, like, a gold digger or something. And the family, like, the dad didn't want Kobe to get married, and I don't know if they've gotten along. I mean, there's a slight chance I might be wrong, but I don't think I am.
That sounds right.
Jomi, can you Google this?
I'll be looking it up.
Just Google Kobe and his dad. Yeah, because, I mean, what's weird is that here's Kobe's dad, played on the 77 Sixers, had a cool nickname, Jelly Bean, was somebody that I knew growing up, was in a dunk contest, and is never at these games, ever. And I don't know what Kobe's mother looks like or if she's alive. Is she alive?
I believe she is.
She must be alive, right?
I would think. But you're right. Like, you never ever see them.
But I always thought that's why he got married, because, you know, he didn't have a ton of friends and he wasn't that close to his family and he wanted, like, his own family.
I agree. Well, the other thing that I hear about from, you know, friends that I have that are close to the Lakers, and this is something that I think keeps him from going to the next level, you know, but I think is also one of the things that I love about him as a fan of the Lakers is he is all about basketball.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, hey, Kobe, we're going to go out to the clubs. No, thanks. I'm going to watch game tape. Like, literally, that's fun for him.
Like, you know what's...
You know, I mean, like, when guys are being normal, when they're playing Xbox or they're going out to the clubs or, you know, whatever, Kobe's literally watching game tape or working out. Or,
you know what,
likely doing both.
You know what's interesting about him? You think, like, all these books that have been written. Like, there's an A-Rod book and there's a Clemens book. I don't really care about A-Rod. I don't think he's interesting. Like, I just think he's kind of a weird dude. Clemens is just a big dumb guy who got caught with steroids. I would read a Kobe book. I can't believe there hasn't been a Kobe book yet. I think he's had one of the most fascinating lives of any athlete in any sport.
Completely, completely agree.
Like, if that was in the right hands, like, there, obviously David Halberstam, unfortunately, is dead. But the right hands, the right kind of writer who did the right interviews and really researched it and delved into it and all the twists and turns that this guy's career has taken and how unique his status is in the sports world. And I don't know. I'd be fascinated.
I completely agree with you. I think he is because whether you love him or hate him, he's completely fascinating. And It would have to be someone that did it objectively. Like,
absolutely. You know, has to be.
You know,
not like that Selena Roberts book. Like, it's got it. Kobe's right. The most polarizing athlete of our generation, and there's no book written about him.
Really, you think he's more polarizing than A-Rod? I think A-Rod's more polarizing.
I don't think people ultimately don't care about A-Rod. And also, A-Rod doesn't – the difference with Kobe and A-Rod is that Kobe has the Laker fans who have his back. It's like a marriage. For life or death, we are defending this guy. Screw you if you don't like him. And it's very personal. Every time I make a joke about Kobe – I mean, I know the emails are coming. It's fine. And I, obviously, right. I'm not – don't take me too seriously. I'm a freaking sports columnist. But it's the way that that Kobe is protected by his fans is unlike any other player fan base relationship I can think of.
Well, you know what it is? It's because we feel like, look, listen, you know me. I love Laker basketball. I live in Connecticut and I still have my Laker season tickets. I won't give them up. So I've had them for over a decade. So I bleed purple and gold. And with Kobe, it's sort of like, you know, you kind of like, it's like your brother, right? In the sense that, like, I got to feel like it's sort of like Roger Clinton in a sense, how Bill felt about Roger. He's like, wow. You have to defend him.
Yeah.
You have to defend him.
He's a family member.
He's our guy. It's family. Yeah. He's family, and he's our best chance. He's
you know
our best chance. I mean, would I think if you asked Laker fans, to be perfectly honest, like, you know, would you rather superstar X versus Y? Like, if we could, quote, pick our superstar, you rather like LeBron than, you know, yeah, maybe. I think some people might say that, you know, because I agree there's not a likable, lovableness to Kobe. But he's our guy. If you are a Laker fan, and the Lakers have a passionate fan base, really passionate fan base, if you're a Laker fan, Kobe's our guy.
Do you subscribe?
And you were forced in 2004. You were forced. Are you a Shaq guy or a Kobe guy? For that whole year, basically, people and you know, people kind of you know made their beds and decided we're Kobe guys.
Do you subscribe to the theory that there are Laker fans and then there are Kobe fans? Almost like the Jews and the Hasidic Jews?
No. I genuinely don't think there are – I don't think there's a Kobe fan that isn't a Laker fan.
No, I'm saying you're both, but you're a Laker fan who is objective about Kobe.
Right.
And then you're a Laker fan who is totally and completely unobjective about Kobe. And you're
Kobe
fan,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yes, but I think there's people – I think any fan like that. I think any team that has a passionate fan base has people like that. I'll give you an example. I was on a podcast earlier this year with a guy who's a diehard Red Sox fan who insisted to me David Ortiz was not done, despite all statistical evidence to the contrary on a 3-year downward decline. But this guy continued to insist that David Ortiz was going to have a monster year this year.
I just want to say that hurts.
Does it? Wait, go back and listen to that podcast. You'll love it. It's even worse.
Listen, if you want to start pulling out sound bites from various podcasts, both of us are going to be embarrassed.
That's true.
Look, I didn't know the guy was 39.
Yeah. I have one question for you. Were you more wrong about David Ortiz,
mm-hmm.
Dice K, or Twitter?
Well, the Dice K thing's not fair because he had a tired arm. And he looked good his last start.
It took him 96 pitches to get through 5 innings.
Yeah, I might have. The bottom
line
is...
He's no longer Dice K. He's Dice Walk. You call him that instead.
I can't be objective about my own team. I just shouldn't. It's terrible.
Right.
I just shouldn't be... I shouldn't try to make any predictions that involve anybody in Boston because obviously they're going to be colored by whatever. I will say, though, that this guy Daniel Bard, although he got knocked around a little yesterday... is a really, really intriguing fantasy sleeper.
Well, we'll see.
As a closer in waiting, potentially. You know, Papelbon, what's the record
but
for...
But you have Saito there, you have Okajima. Ramirez has actually had a great year for you guys.
Really, really good year. Really good
He's
year.
Had a terrific year in middle relief. And by the way, you still have, like, you still have, you know, Buchholz and Masterson, both of whom, you know, I could see closing. I could see them doing a Papelbon thing with them if it ever came to that.
Masterson,
you don't have them
chance.
In the rotation.
Yeah. Well, they certainly have more ways that their pitching staff could go than any team I could remember. They have three starters in the minors who are all ready to come up.
Exactly.
And their bullpen is more loaded than everybody else combined. What's been the biggest? Let's talk fantasy before
I'll
go.
For 1 second though, I'll just say this. The other thing is that, I mean, they probably wouldn't. The Buckholzer, you know, massive thing would be a long term kind of crazy sort of way out there kind of thing. But this year, if something were to happen to Papelbon, I'll give you a sleeper, John Smoltz.
Yeah.
Who's closed before in the past very successfully.
I worry about Papelbon because he's been healthy for basically 4 years. I don't feel like he's as effective as he has been in the past. And with closers, you just, if you get more than 4 years out of a closer straight, healthy, it's pretty rare.
Right.
Usually something weird is going to happen. Wait, I forgot to ask you my third part of my Jack Nicholson question.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
We should talk fantasy another time.
We can talk fantasy another time. I think this is why people love coming on your podcast so much. I was telling to a friend, I said, I'm doing Simmons podcast today. And they said, oh, well, you talk fantasy. I said, no, I'm so excited. I'm going to get to talk Lakers. Because I talk fantasy all the time. And don't get me wrong, I love it. I'm really lucky to do it. But I think people really enjoy your podcast because they get to come on and talk about stuff they normally don't get to
It's like you're a porn actress who doesn't have to do a sex scene today.
Right, exactly.
I just needed you for a scene, but you didn't have to actually do anything.
I'm Sasha Grey in The Girlfriend Experience.
Exactly, which is a very good movie.
I've heard that. I haven't seen it yet.
Third part of my Jack Nicholson question.
Yes.
So, at every Laker game, really one of the best parts of going to a Laker game, and it is fun to go to a Laker game as much as I hate being surrounded by Laker fans,
right,
but the experience of a Laker game is very fun. So they had the celebrity montage. They show everybody who's in the stands, and it always ends with Jack Nicholson.
Always.
And he pretends he doesn't know he's on camera, and then it's like, oh, yeah, I'm on camera, and he does the Jack Nicholson thing, and the crowd goes bonkers. Do they still do the celebrity montage after he passes?
Absolutely.
But then run the old clip of Jack at the very end?
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
And just do it forever. And like in 2035, people are like, who the hell is that old guy at the end? It's like, oh, that's Jack Nicholson.
That's a great idea.
I feel like they do, right?
I think they should. I don't know if they would or not, but they should. They absolutely should. It may be overkill. If they've retired his jersey and they've painted the chair...
That's good. No, I think that's fair. I think he's the greatest celebrity or the most recognizable celebrity fan of any team.
That's what I was going to ask you. Because, I mean, you've got Spike Lee with the Knicks. Like, if you're going to make your top five.
But Spike Lee has lost so much cred with the Knicks with the whole sitting courtside for the Laker game and patting Kobe in the back.
That was nuts.
Would Nicholson ever do that for anyone on another team? Never. Not in a million
years.
You know
who's the worst about that, by the way, who drives me crazy? And I've never seen anyone call her out about this. Penny Marshall shows up at every game wearing the jersey of that team.
I know.
Like, she used to be a Laker fan, and then I remember when we were playing Sacramento back when, you know, the Kings had Chris Webber, and she showed up in Sacramento wearing a Kings jersey, and it drove me up a wall.
You know why she does? You know why nobody gives a crap? Because she's a sad, fat old lady. doesn't have a lot going on. That's why. Here's the Boston fan.
All right.
Donnie Wahlberg made a lot of money from Saw 2.
Right.
Like a crazy amount of money. And then he did the New Kids tour. Donnie Wahlberg's got money.
Yes.
He's got, like, secretly has FU money.
Okay.
Which is the best kind of money to have.
Right.
He can, like, fly around and, like, oh, the Celtics are in Sacramento tonight. I'm gonna fly down and meet them. I think Donnie Wahlberg could go to that Nicholson level.
Stop. You're insane. Now you're crazy. Go back to talking about how David Ortiz is going to make a comeback. That's more rational.
Maybe not Nicholson, but he could be the guy who is at every Boston game. Because we don't really have that guy.
Well, the to me, if it's not you, the most famous Boston celeb is probably Affleck.
I'm not even in the top 10.
Stop it.
I'm not even in the top 30.
If you ask sports fans, who's the biggest Boston fan, who's the most famous Boston fan, they would say you.
They'd say Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck is more famous than you, but you are more associated with Boston sports than he is.
Nah, I wouldn't be in the top 10. I'd even put Elijah Dushku ahead of me.
Oh, she's so crazy hot. How do you feel? I'm not sure how I feel about Elijah Dushku and Rick Fox, by the way. Have you seen this? They're together now.
You know what? I feel very vindicated because I've been very dubious of her alleged Boston sports fandom for a long time.
Okay.
And she goes and now she's dating Rick Fox.
Right.
Identified with the Lakers, although he did play with the Celtics once upon a time.
But Celtics,
he's a Laker, in my opinion.
He won his rings with the Lakers.
I'm glad he came up because one of the weird things about living in L.A. is that weird I think it's called the Sports Zone with the guy who I think was one of the guys in Better Off Dead riding around in the car chasing John Cusack, Rob Fukuzaki.
it's Rob Fukuzami, right?
Yeah, Rob Fukuzaki, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
He's got the Harry Cosell voice.
Right. I met him on. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy. Every time they come back, I always expect to go, Lane Maya. but he's always on with a former Laker, and they all seem kind of sad. Worthy, Cooper, Fox.
Right.
Who's the other one that's always on? But
Norm Nixon is on a lot.
Norm Nixon. They're wearing suits that they look like. They're nice suits, but they look like they bought the suits in like 1998. Like they were like a $1,000 suit, but 11 years ago, and they all kind of have that glazed, I hope this kind of works out or no full-time gig, and the producer said he'd talk to me after, but I'm not sure if it's going to happen.
Right. Well, listen.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely know what you mean because I'm now out in Red Sox country living in Connecticut, so I get Nesson, and Dennis Eckersley has that exact same look after every Red Sox game.
Yeah, you're right. The Red Sox do it too because we have Eckersley and Jim Rice and a couple other ones. It's a strange phenomenon where
right.
these old guys come back and they become the post-game guys. None of them are really that good. Eckersley's pretty good on the post-game, but
he's not bad. But you know, the problem is because like somebody like Kobe Bryant would be phenomenal after the or LeBron or somebody like that after they start playing if they wanted to be a color commentator. That's why
Kobe
one of the reasons Barkley's so good is because they're so used to speaking in front of a camera. They're so used to knowing that like everything they say is going to be a quote. No one ever talked to Rick Fox after games, really. No one ever talked to Norm Nixon or these guys. So it's weird for them to sort of be in that spotlight and all of a sudden like talk. And I think that's one of the reasons why Barkley is so terrific, and one of the reasons why like Weber's been such a revelation as an analyst. I think he's great.
I agree.
And so, because you were a little surprised about that. And that's why it's tough to find, because usually the really famous guys don't want to do it.
Here's what I don't get is why is it a prerequisite?
Sort of the mid-tier guys.
But why is it a prerequisite that you have to get a former guy from the team? Like, why you were in town last night. Why couldn't Rob Fukuzaki have said, I'm going to get Matthew Berry just for the hell of it. Mix it up. I'm going to get the talented Mr. Roto to talk about the Lakers. Because Mike McGee isn't available tonight.
You'd have to ask Rob that, but I'll tell you, I think it's because we as a society, really, but especially in sports, pigeonhole people. And
yeah.
I mean, for example, and this is what I was talking about with your podcast, why I think people come and enjoy. Like, no one's ever going to have me on to talk about sports if it's not fantasy related.
Right.
Generally speaking. I mean, maybe they'll do it on local radio or something like that. I mean, I did, people forget, I did, when I was just starting out and I was living in L.A., and I was working at 710 ESPN in Los Angeles, I did Angels post games for 2 years. Anytime
nice.
Terry Smith and Rory Marcus were on the road or on vacation, I filled in for them. So I did Angels post game for 2 years. I did Lakers post game. Sometimes I did, we weren't the official station, so we would do like these, rogue, after the game we would have a Lakers call-in show, and I would host those a decent amount. But, whatever, I'm the fantasy guy.
So you're saying you've been pigeonholed?
No, not pigeonholed. Listen, I love my job. Make no
it's
mistake.
Like, wait, you know what it's like? It's like when Jamie Lee Curtis started getting naked in movies, and everybody was like, show us your boobs, Jamie. And she was like,
no.
But I'm an actress.
I'm an actress. And you're like, no, you're a really nice pair of boobs.
So it's for you, it's like, Matthew, tell us why Howie Kendrick sucks.
Right.
And you're just constantly. And by the way, why does Howie Kendrick suck?
Boy, it's weird. We talked about this the other day on our fantasy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Nate and I talked about this, and he actually brought up the fact that you have
Darko corollary
on your AL team.
Yeah, because he emailed me. He loved the Darko Milicek corollary that I came up with, where you're waiting for somebody who has a ton of potential, allegedly, and you pass a point where you realize, well, maybe this guy just sucks.
Right.
And for Howie Kendrick, I reached that point about 4 weeks ago. I've had him on my team literally for 4 years.
They're now talking about bringing up this kid, Sean Rodriguez, who's gotten a cup of coffee before with the Angels. He strikes out a little bit too much in AAA for my take. I don't think he's... But the weird thing is that the stuff... I mean, Howie Kendrick's actually gotten some stolen bases. He's actually hit for more power than we expected to this year. He's got a handful of home runs. It's just the things you expect about Howie Kendrick. High average hasn't happened.
Hasn't happened. He's like 0 for his last 30.
He's been brutal. I've always thought Howie Kendrick was a bit overrated. I think it's a bit of a struggle. I don't know what's going on with Howie Kendrick. I've never been a huge Howie Kendrick guy, and this is speaking as an Angels fan.
Yeah.
So,
you know, we're starting to
find out.
I've
never been a big fan of him from a fantasy standpoint. Let me put it that way.
Well, you know how we're not allowed to stereotype with ethnicities anymore. It's not
yes.
PC. Can't do it. I think we can do it with sports teams.
Okay.
And here are my stereotypes. Don't ever take an Oakland A's hitter. I don't care who it is. A prospect, like, you know, like in a minor league draft. Don't ever, like, draft, like, oh, the A's have this hot slugger coming up. Just ignore it. Don't take an A.
That's a terrible ballpark. Although I will say this. Matt Holliday's actually hitting much better than people realize.
I'm talking about young guys. I'm talking about young guys coming up. The Angels, don't trust any of their prospects, because obviously they either make stuff up about how good they are or whatever. Something's in the water. I don't know what it is, but we've seen 10,000 of them not pan out.
I think we're at the Darko Milicek era with Brandon Wood.
You've had seven of those guys, Dallas McPherson. Like, it's, I guess Jared Weaver might be, because he's been pretty good this year.
Jared Weaver, Sean Figgins was a product of the Angels farm system, Mike Napoli. He's turned out pretty well.
Oh, I forgot. Napoli is a good one. Yeah. So maybe, but I remember, what was it, 3-4 years ago, and everybody's like, the Angels, most loaded farm system in baseball.
No, and it's true. I mean, there's a lot of guys like that. Casey Kochman, you forget about, Casey Kochman was solid, but, of course, he went in to share a trade.
Yeah. I think that would be interesting to come up with all the stereotypes of different, whatever, guys that you don't want. Like, for instance, I really like
always draft an Atlanta pitcher. People
always draft
Atlanta
an A's pitcher. A's pitchers. Because I just, in our keeper league, I just spent $12 on Vin Mazzaro.
Oh.
I like Vin Mazzaro. Who knows?
I like him. I'm not crazy about him. He had a nice strikeout to walk rate, but he still doesn't strike out as many guys as I would like.
Mm.
In the minor leagues, when you're pitching, I like a guy that's striking out one guy, that has like a K9 of like, ideally like 8 or better.
I think his
is in the high 6 or 7, which is still pretty good. But in AAA, to like really dominate, especially considering the fact that you're coming into Oakland where you're not going to get a ton of run support.
I
picked up Mazzaro in I'm in a 19 team league.
Yeah.
Literally a deep, so a 19 team league, and I picked up Mazzaro because I missed out on Bastardo from Philadelphia, who I like more.
Tony Bastard.
See,
that's my favorite one since. Well, that's my favorite one since Joe Table.
That should
be a whole team of Latin American translations of Latin names and like the 20 best ones. Because Joe Table was always the best one. I like Tony Bastard. It's pretty good too.
Tony Bastard is fantastic. But Mazzaro's solid. I mean, we'll see. He walked more than he struck out in his debut. Let's see what happens. I mean, the A's have a ton of those guys, though. That's one of those things. It's like, they have a ton of those like young pitcher guys, and I don't know.
Wait a second. Before we let you go, give me one sleeper in each league, baseball guy that you think is going to come on like a freight train.
I mean, like
only one.
I know, but like, I mean, I want to narrow this down for you. So, like, are you talking about like a guy that's not doing well now, a guy that's not up in the majors, a guy that's
saying
a guy that will turn it around?
Like, for instance, if you had asked me this question 10 days ago, I would have said Josh Beckett is about to take off because you could kind of see it.
Okay, well that's fine, but Josh Beckett isn't a sleeper. He's owned in every league. That's why I'm asking.
Well, but I'm saying like somebody that you think like, you know what, this guy you might be able to trade for in your league. You might be able to swipe this guy because he's not doing as well as he should be. So it would be either that kind of guy or a guy who is about to start playing or is about to get called up, whoever.
A ton of guys. I mean, Rockies just called up Carlos Gonzalez, who I like. Pirates just called up Andrew McCutchen, who I like. Tommy Hansen's coming up Saturday. You know that for the Braves.
That's a good one.
Andy LaRoche, not Adam LaRoche, his brother, but Andy LaRoche, had an unbelievable May. I think he hit like 330 in May, and he's hitting over 300 for the Pirates, playing every day. Like him a lot. Tony Gwynn's playing in every day for San Diego. Tony Gwynn Jr. Actually playing every day. Like him a lot. Hey, I'll give you a weird one that I've noticed. Look at, are you on the online right now?
Unfortunately, I got knocked off. What are you talking about?
Maybe Joe Meade can do this while we're talking. But
he's
Jason
flatlining.
Hamill, he's not there either?
No, sure. Joe Meade passed out about 2 hours ago.
I'm here.
Oh, okay, sorry.
There you go. The always exciting Joe Meade. By the way, there's a whole Pod Vader, who's the producer of the podcast that I do with Nate.
Yeah.
Big rivalry with Joe Meade.
Is
upset at the amount of airtime that Joe Meade gets on your podcast. Believes that he's a Pod Vader wannabe.
Joe Meade gets airtime because he's a team player.
Well, there you go.
Pod Vader comes in. He takes 9 shots in 8 minutes. Joe Meade comes in, just tries to fit in with the other 4 guys.
Are you saying Pod Vader's Eddie House?
Pod Vader's Eddie House. You need to run plays for him. You need to run him off screens. He's going to shoot every time he gets it.
Right. Anyway, Jason Hamill of the Rockies has been unbelievable. You know, he came over from Tampa Bay, and he has been unbelievable on the road. So if you could look up, Joe Meade, just look up his road splits this year, what Jason Hamill is doing on the road. He had another game. He pitched well at Houston last night. But that's like one that's he's available in like in every league.
The home road splits have now translated to the American League this year. Like, for instance, Brandon McCarthy yesterday. Now, Brandon McCarthy's been pretty good and against certain teams. Like, he's a guy, we had him on our team. Like, you start him against Houston because Houston sucks. You bench him at Yankee Stadium. But Yankee Stadium has now turned into the place where you look at your schedule and be like, ooh, he's going to Yankee Stadium on Friday. I think I'm going to sit him down this week.
Yeah.
It's like the new Coors Field. It's unbelievable.
It's absolutely the new Coors Field. You want no part of, you know.
None. I mean, you don't even, if you have.
Sebastian, you're a little worried, but.
Well, but you'd start like, I guess you'd start like Josh Beckett, like somebody who's really good, but anybody like mid-level or below, you do not want them starting Yankee Stadium.
No, but it's interesting you bring up the Rangers. I mean, listen, like, you know, Scott Feldman actually has pitched really well
for the
Rangers.
It's been really good. Yeah.
I mean, you know, so there's a lot of guys like that.
Well, how about Frank Francisco, freaking, who's been on everybody's
unreal.
Team twice and is now a top 5 closer somehow?
He's been unreal. He's been lights out. He's been absolutely fantastic. I'll tell you that I think Matt Holliday, I mentioned him earlier, like him a lot. Look at what Jason Giambi. By the way, Jason Giambi.
Mm.
You and I have a Jason Giambi bet, if you remember.
Mm. He's only got like 2 homers, though.
No, he's got 8. He had his 8th last night.
Oh, he had 3
Jason
like
Giambi's
a week ago.
He's been red hot like the last week and a half.
Must have gotten a new shipment.
Something like that.
I got a guy for you.
Oh, yeah?
Just traded for him in my other league, and partly because I've always had a soft spot for him.
Okay.
But a notorious slow starter who has shown signs of a pulse lately, Mr. Adrian Beltre.
Absolutely. Love Adrian Beltre. He's been Tristan Cockcroft did who's one of my fellow fantasy writers, did an absolutely fantastic article on ESPN.com that you should read, just all about batting average on balls in play, just about that particular stat. And it's where, you know, some guys are lucky and some guys aren't, and he explains the stat. And basically, I won't bore all your readers with it, your listeners, if they don't want to hear it, but I highly recommend the article. And more importantly, I'll just tell you this, that Beltre was on Tristan's list as one of the unluckiest hitters so far this year, one of the top 10 unluckiest hitters so far. This is a guy that the last 3 years has hit basically 25 home runs, 70-odd, you know, RBI, somewhere in the 70 and 80s. He's going to steal double-digit bases.
Yeah.
He's going to hit like 275. He's always been a second-half player. I'm totally with you on Adrian Beltre. Really like him. By the way, just as long as we're talking kind of like under-the-radar pitchers that people aren't talking about, Jason Vargas of the Mariners actually pitched really well as
He got
well.
Lit up a little bit 2 days ago, though, or yesterday.
Didn't pitch is great, but he's actually, since getting into the rotation for Seattle, has actually pitched really, really well.
You know what's been funny about this year, at least in my keeper league, was these guys, you know, there was a clump of guys that everybody kind of liked for a comeback year, but you weren't totally ready to spend $25 on them. And it was like Verlander, Carmona, Wong, Burnett, all in this group of the really, we're kind of in a bidding war, but
really.
Yeah. Nobody really totally wants them.
Bedard was in that.
Bedard, another one.
Carpenter. Yeah, there was all those kind of mid-level guys.
Yeah, those guys that's like, man, if you hit the jackpot with this guy, you're basically getting an ace for $10 cheaper than what he would cost. But the flip side is he could kill your team.
Right.
And Chinming and Carmona have just been axe murderers.
Brutal.
Murderers. Like, you almost can't bounce back from what they did to your team the first 2 months, but yet Justin Verlander, probably a top three or four guy, at least in the American League.
I got sucked into a 10-team AL only league with a couple of guys here at ESPN, and Keith Olbermann is in the league.
Mm.
And, you know, Keith Olbermann never shy about taking shots at ESPN. And
yeah.
So, like, I didn't want to, like, screw up this league, okay, because of that, right? I've never met Keith. I was in an online draft room with him once, but I've never actually met the man. So, anyway, Chin-Ming Wong is on my team in this league, and it was not a daily league. So, you know, I had Wong in for the first week, and he literally killed my ERA, and then that team has, like, Sizemore on it, and I've lost everyone. I've lost Asdrubal Cabrera. I've lost that team's, like, in dead last. But Chin-Ming Wong, like, single-handedly caused me to, you know, be embarrassed in front of Keith Olbermann.
And then they thought maybe he's showing signs of life.
No.
Got killed yesterday.
No, I didn't understand why people were all excited about that, because even if he gets back to, quote, being Chin-Ming Wong, right, he's still in a ballpark that, as we talked about, is the new Coors, is the new Arlington. And by the way, he doesn't strike anyone out.
Well, you know what's become really interesting is with none of these Yankee pitchers able to last five or six innings, I think their setup guys are just going to start to load up on wins, but they don't have any good setup guys.
No.
Which is, it's like a catch-22. Like, do you start whoever? I don't even know who their lead setup guy is. They've had 15. But they might end up with a setup guy getting like 10 wins in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
Because over and over again, the bullpen is, they're going to the bullpen fifth or sixth. I don't know what to make of this Yankees team. They're certainly the most interesting fantasy team we've seen in a while. Like, Teixeira lately has just been
Teixeira's been terrific. Robinson Cano has been terrific. Johnny Damon's having a great year, very quietly.
Yeah.
Jeter's having a comeback year for him. I mean, Jeter was a guy that, you know, people kind of said, he's going to hit 300, double, you know, 10 home runs, 10 steals, nothing really exciting. And he's playing like an elite fantasy shortstop again.
We got to go because Joe Mead has to do rehab for his mangled knee.
All right. Well, I have two things real quickly.
Yeah, plug
for you
two things.
Well, no, I'm not even going to plug.
Plug them. Go ahead.
All right. Well, then, but this isn't what I was going to bring up. Well, I'll plug the fact that you can play fantasy football for free. You can now sign up and you can do mock draft lobbies on ESPN.com. Like, so you can pick like wherever you want to draft, and then like have a practice draft at any time.
That's a great idea. I've been pushing for it for 2 years.
Yeah, so, well, we have it now. We have it now. We have the, you know, and you can also do mock auctions and the whole nine yards. So Fantasy Football now open on ESPN.com. And Nate and I do a podcast every single day with Nate. So people who like podcasts, clearly listening to this, should download and listen to Nate and I. We do fantasy baseball every single day, and we'll start up with football in August.
What about throwing out the first pitch?
Oh yeah, well I'm doing that tonight. Here's my question for. I had a couple questions for you that we haven't got a chance to. One is, you know, going back to our Simonberry League.
Yeah.
You need to tell me like when you want your facial hair, when you want the demand for your facial hair.
Oh yeah.
Sell off that bet. And by the way, don't we need to get? We still didn't get that. We need to give that guy a tattoo.
Yeah.
We never told that guy what tattoo to get. And where's the guy that was supposed to, like, put up big cardboard pullouts of me and you at his brother's wedding?
Yeah, it didn't. There's been a lot of – it was a mess.
Yeah,
a mess.
Poor
FEMA. We're bringing FEMA in. Poor planning, poor execution, just a bunch of bad things. Plug the first pitch because we got to go.
All right. Well, anyway, yeah, so I'm doing this tonight. I'm marrying a couple tomorrow – a guy that's a fan of my podcast wanted me to marry him in the state of California. You can get ordained for a day. They're having their rehearsal dinner at the Oakland A's game tonight, Friday night. And so I'm throwing out the first pitch as part of this whole weekend of me marrying them and everything like that there. And
are you nervous?
I'm a little nervous.
Don't bounce it.
Well, right. You know, I mean, like, so, you know, Golic is sort of the Mendoza line of ESPN guys. Throwing out the first pitch, and I don't want to, like, you know, Baba Booey it, you know, poor Gary Delabate. You know, I'm a huge Stern fan, so they've been getting tons of play out of that. But so here's my question to you: I feel fairly confident that if I stand in front of the mound, you know, I can throw it fairly. I'll throw it fairly soft, and I'll get it over the plate, and it'll be fine.
I would cheat a little. Go like 5 feet in front of the rubber, because 60 feet 6 inches is actually longer than you think in a giant ballpark like that.
Well, that's my
feels
question.
Bigger.
Do I? Because Nate was saying on the podcast, Nate's like, look, this is probably the only chance in your life you're going to get to do this. Don't be a wimp get up on the mound and throw hard.
That's what George Bush did.
Have you ever done this?
No, but I would do it from the rubber.
Yeah.
My only advice for you would be to not wear like a jacket, because I think that's a mistake a lot of people make, where they have the jacket that kind of hinder. They don't realize until they throw it that the jacket's pulling their arm another direction.
Right.
So take off your jacket if you're wearing one, and don't wear like a tight dress shirt, something like that, because then you get the – or if you're going to wear that, then unbutton the sleeves.
Yeah, I like that.
So
that's good advice.
Do it so that your arm isn't going to be encumbered in any way.
Yeah. But I'm definitely a little nervous. I'm not going to lie. I'm definitely a little nervous. Because you start thinking about it, and it's like you don't get a warm-up. You go out there, and they give you a ball.
All right. Well, good luck. And we have to do our – we've been planning this big podcast devoted to
– 90210?
No, our All-Jew podcast.
Our All-Jew podcast. Yes,
yeah.
I love that.
We've been talking about that forever. We were at the at Tribeca, and we were having an argument about – not an argument. It was actually a discussion about
right.
people who should have been Jewish and weren't, and people who were Jewish but shouldn't have been. And it turned like there was like 10 people around, and everybody's like throwing out names. It was probably the most exciting moment of the weekend.
It was amazing.
I've never seen you happier to talk about anything.
Yes, it was. Well, it's a subject I'm passionate about, being
yeah.
Jewish myself, of course.
You should host a talk show. You should have a talk show. You know, like at Saturday Night Live, they'd have those fake talk shows?
Right.
Where it'd be like, and now coming up on Tiger Talk or whatever. But you could actually, you should host a show about just being Jewish. Because
right.
nobody's given it more thought or has more opinions than you do.
Oh, I'm sure there are definitely lots of scholars that have, but perhaps no one
true.
As goofy as me.
Well, but nobody's put more unconventional thought into it, let's say.
That I will accept.
Yeah.
We should do that. And I want to do a whole podcast devoted to 90210, actually, to talk about that show. So maybe that would be the greatest, worst podcast ever. Half 90210, half all Jews.
But anyway, good luck. Good luck throwing out the first pitch.
Thank you, sir.
And we'll talk to you about fantasy stuff. By the way, I was at a newsstand in L.A. the other day, yesterday.
Yeah.
Two fantasy magazines, football. On the newsstand. Thought it was really early this year. June 5th?
The ESPN Fantasy Magazine, I'm holding one right now. Larry Fitzgerald on the cover, so they're out.
I always thought it was late June, early July was usually when they came out. I think early June's too early.
It's year-round now. I mean, my top 200's already up on ESPN.com.
That's ridiculous.
I already have a top 200 of
absurd.
For fantasy football.
That's
so
absurd.
You can check that out and whatever. It'll still be up. It's been a while since I've updated it, but
all right, Matt DeBerry, we'll check you out on ESPN.com and on your Fantasy Focus podcast. Good luck.
Hey,
thanks, Bill.
Let me update you guys on this before I look like a loser. Jason Hamill away split, 1.86 ERA. He hasn't given up a home run away, but he's given up 5 at home. Very strange. At home, he sucks. He's 0-2 with 8.53 ERA.
But on the road, he's got a 1.36 ERA.
1.86. He's 2-1 in 4 starts.
There you go.
Good call.
Jason
Talk
Campbell.
To you soon.
All right, dude. See ya.
Target to set off.
Whoa!
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
That concludes, ends, finishes, wraps up another BS report. With all the talk about baseball, the upcoming football season, and hockey playoffs, Bill Simmons neglected to mention something which frankly cannot go unstated. Okay, here goes. For a limited time, hurry into Subway and enjoy the new Tuscan Chicken Melt. Lovely seasoned chicken, melted bubbly cheese with olive vinaigrette, piled so high with the crisp veggies you love on your choice of freshly baked bread. All that deliciousness with 9 grams of fat. It's part of a fresh fit meal.